Chapter 52. They had been descending in silence for hours, fatigue eating into their concentration. The wall now as close to Shearer's made no difference, when Rue said,
19 kilometers of tethers pulled out. Can't be far now.
Goma signalled to Kano that they must be near, but there was no answer. She did not immediately think the worst at this, for Kano had sounded tired the last time they spoke, and it would not surprise her in the least if he were asleep. On the far side of the wheel, the sky was beginning to show the first faint omens of day, an indigo haze where before it had been night. But the environmental readout on her suit still maintained that the outside conditions were entirely incompatible with the wants of human survival, that the air was too thin, too poor in oxygen, and cold enough to freeze their lungs if they were so foolish as to breathe it in. By now, Kanu, Nissa, and Hector would be totally reliant on the bottled oxygen while trying to keep hypothermia at bay.
Kanu,
she called again, when they had descended another 50 grooves. The answer came back at last, faint, as if he were calling from the other side of the solar system.
Quickly, Goma.
We're coming.
They gave it one last push, Rue cranking the winch to its maximum output, spooling the last few 100 meters of tether at the emergency deployment rate, almost freefall, with their feet barely kissing the wheel's rushing succession of grooves and intermediate sections. And then there was a spill of light, not quite directly below them, but close enough, a yellow warmth like the glow from a campfire. They fell. It was a slip of a few meters, no more, but it was enough to send Rue crashing into a groove, catching the edge of it with her suit's chest pack. Goma felt the impact travel through the line, a hard pluck of tension caught and then released, and watched Rue suddenly go limp above her, arms lolling at her side.
Rue!
There was no answer. Goma's heart was racing. They had been descending fast enough as it was, but that sudden short fall had been as terrifying as anything in her experience.
Eunice, are you all right?
Right below you. Grapple must have shifted and regained its grip.
Rue's hurt.
I can see her. We're not far from the ledge now. The winch is still spooling. I'm going to swing out, see if I can make it down. You'll be a few seconds behind me. Watch out for Rue and for that tether. You don't want to tangle yourself up in that.
There was time only to do, not think. Rue had been hurt, but if Goma dwelt on that, they were all going to be in trouble. To help Rue, to help all of them, she had to act quickly and dispassionately.
Kano, we have a problem. Be ready to grab whatever you can and don't get pulled off the ledge.
I'm leaning out. I can see you coming down. You're only a few grooves above me. What happened?
No time to explain. Just grab Eunice and her gear as soon as you're able.
Hold on.
Then they heard a groan. Rue's voice. And Goma's heart leapt a little. No one groaned unless they still had some life in them.
What just?
You were knocked out, Eunice said. Turn off the winch. We're in danger of dropping too far.
Rue still sounded groggy.
Yes.
Wait.
They slowed. Goma heaved a sigh of relief and realized she had barely been breathing since that first slip of the grapple. Damn their useless technology. Could it not work flawlessly just for once? But she supposed they had been asking rather a lot of it, expecting it to maintain a permanent grip on the alien fabric of the wheel. Goma looked down. Eunice had arrived at Kanu's level. She halted just above the groove from which the yellow light spilled out, and waited for Kano to grab the supply bag and swing it into safety. Goma saw Kano's gloved hands, a sheathed forearm, but no more of him than that. One by one, they all managed to get into the groove. Rue lowered them a step at a time, taking no chances. Goma thought about the grapple, wondering if it had enough room to slip again without being pulled out of the groove completely. Not much they could do about it. 50 kilometers away. Kano was the only one of the party moving. Hector was a grey mass at the back of the groove, tucked into himself like a sculpture carved from a single lump of stone. It took a second glance from Goma to reassure herself that the Tanto really was inside a spacesuit and not simply exposed to the atmosphere. Next to him, squatting with her knees drawn up, hands laced around them, head slumped, and with the face behind the visor showing no sign of registering their presence, was another spacesuited human. They pushed the supplies into the back of the groove, clearing space for Rue, whose feet were just coming down into view. Goma stood as near to the edge as she dared and helped her swing back onto the hard, level floor of the groove. Rue wobbled, then found her footing, glancing over her shoulder at the drop.
"I still don't know what happened back there."
"We fell,"
Goma said, casting an apprehensive eye over the front of Rue's suit. The chest module was buckled in a crease where it had borne the brunt of the impact with the groove's hard corner, half its status displays dim, the rest pulsing red. None of that looked good to Goma.
"I don't remember." "It was only a few meters. The grapple must have slipped. You hit the edge of a groove. I saw it happen just above me. How's your head?"
"So, there's a smear on the back of your visor. The impact must have smashed your head against the glass, knocked you out for a second or two. Am I making sense to you?"
"About as much as ever."
"I'm worried about concussion. I hate these suits. Why did we ever agree to do anything involving spacesuits?"
"Because it also involves Tantos."
They unclipped the power winch, leaving it to hang on the end of the tether, but still within easy reach.
"She's hurt,"
Kanu said, noticing the damage to Rue's suit.
"Did that happen just now?"
"I'm all right,"
Rue said, waving aside his concern.
"You've all taken an incredible risk to help us. I didn't want any of you to get hurt."
"Keep an eye on your life support traces,"
Goma instructed Rue, before turning to Kanu.
"Nissa doesn't look good. I'm sorry we couldn't get to you sooner."
"You have nothing to apologize for, Goma. Not so long ago we were at each other's throats. But I am concerned for Nissa. Her suit hit its margins earlier than mine. When she started running low on air and power, I hoped she'd be able to extend it by remaining motionless. Now she's in and out of consciousness."
"We'll do what we can,"
Goma said. She went to Nissa. Her suit's displays and marker lights were all dimmed or inactive, signifying its low power condition. Nissa made no acknowledgement of Goma's approach, not even when she knelt next to her and tried to open the access panel on her chest pack. Goma studied the layout of valves and power connectors for a moment, comparing them against the supplies they had brought down from Mpozi. Then she went and selected an oxygen cylinder and emergency energy cell. Eunice came over.
"Let me deal with that,"
she said gently, taking the items from Goma's hands. Eunice coupled them into Nissa's backpack, and after a second or two, there was a twitch of color from one of the displays, but Nissa showed no immediate response to the influx of oxygen and power. Eunice watched for a minute, opened another panel in the chest pack, and adjusted some manual settings.
"Well?"
Goma whispered.
"Kanu,"
Eunice said.
"Things aren't good. Nissa has gone into a hypothermic coma. It must have come on in the last few minutes. Her suit's incredibly cold and she was down to a few gasps of oxygen on the needle."
Kanu knelt down next to them. He had yet to accept supplementary oxygen or power, even though the exterior indicators on his own suit were already feeble or completely dimmed.
"How bad?"
"Hopefully we got here in time to avoid brain damage, but whatever the case, she needs better medical care than we can offer her here."
"What are you thinking?" Goma asked.
"Waiting for the wheel to carry us back into space isn't going to be an option for Nissa. We have to get her up there much faster than that. The winch is the only way."
"Fine," Goma said. "Hook her on. Reel the line back in as fast as it'll go, if you think the winch is strong enough."
"The winch will be fine. It's the grapple that concerns me. But Nisa's already on the verge of death. She'll need someone to guide her up. We can zip her into the supply bag. She won't weigh any more than those bottles and power cells."
"I'll do it,"
Tanu said instantly. Show me how the winch system works, and I'll take her back to your ship.
You're barely better off than Nyssa, Eunice said. That parasite in your skull is probably doing more to hold you on the right side of consciousness than you realize. One slip, though, and it's all over. It'll have to be one of us. We're still pretty sharp, and we've already crossed the terrain once before.
Goma nodded. The answer seemed obvious to her, not even worth discussing.
Can you do it?
I could, Eunice answered. Were I not staying down here with Rue and Hector?
No.
I will not leave the Risen, Goma. That's non-negotiable. Besides, if Rue has problems, I know a damn sight more about spacesuit functions than you do.
If Rue's suit's damaged, then Rue should be the one who goes up.
She may or may not have concussion, and under an increased life support burden, her suit may or may not last until she reaches the top of the tether. She's better off here with me, where I can finesse her suit to keep her alive. You're the strongest of us, anyway. You've got me to thank for that. All those good genes I had the decency to pass on to you.
You're not going to budge, are you?
I've made a life out of not budging. Bit late in the day to change old habits.
You don't even know Hector.
Reason enough to spend some time with him.
Goma went over to Rue and Kanu. They were working on the seals of the supply bag, opening it in readiness for Nyssa.
She wants me to handle the ascent, Goma said, looking at Rue. You can't do it, not after what happened. I'd like to argue with that, but she's got a point. And if you ran into trouble with that suit, you're much better in her company than in mine. Can you put up with her until we're back on the lander?
I am still willing to take Nyssa up myself,
Kanu said. Goma shook her head.
You're in no shape for that. If I'd had more confidence in the winch, I'd say we stuff you into the same bag. But there really isn't room, and I'd worry about the line slipping again.
I'll stay, then,
Kanu said, his tone indicating that he accepted the logic of the decision, even if it displeased him. Nyssa was still unresponsive, although her suit was now back on partial power, and her oxygen partial pressure had climbed back to a low but tolerable level. They eased her into the bag, checked her life signs one more time, then sealed it around her like a cocoon. The bag was toughened with layers of impact padding and self-healing membranes, sufficient to protect Nyssa against tears, bumps, and micrometeorite impacts. They had done what they could for her.
Can Goma handle all that on her own?
Kanu asked.
The load will be on her suit, not on Goma, Eunice said. In the meantime, you get to spend quality time with Rue, Hector and me.
Aren't you worried I'll kill the Tanto?
Rue said.
No, Eunice said sharply, because that would make me an idiot. You were the weapon, but you were not culpable.
Her tone softened.
And I overreacted, for which I'm sorry. How many times do I have to say that?
Once is a start, Rue said.
Goma tugged down on the power winch and coupled it to the front of her suit, making sure the latch was secure. She tested her own weight on the line. If the grapple failed now, there was no hope of it holding once she started hauling Nyssa up.
Will you manage down here?
We'll start a campfire sing-song, Eunice said. The time will fly past, and you need to be on your way. Once you're moving, I'll give Captain Vazin a heads up as to what's happening. If she can drop Mposi back down between you and the grapple, that will save a lot of time.
Rue, I'll see you in a few hours. Kanu, Hector, the same. Eunice, take good care of them all.
I shall.
And while you're at it, take care of yourself. I still haven't got to the bottom of what you are.
There's no mystery, Goma. Just me. Alive. As simple as that.
Nothing about you is simple.
She applied increasing power to the winch, drawing herself up from the floor of the groove before taking Nyssa's weight. The winch was powerful, and showed no hesitation as the burden increased. Perhaps they were going to make it after all. She paused for one moment to make eye contact with Eunice, Kanu, and Rue, giving them each a nod. She would have envied them their time with Hector, but the evidence suggested Hector was long past the point of conversation. They would do well to keep him alive as the wheel carried them up to space. Goma managed an average ascent rate of 10 kilometers an hour, running and leaping, doing her best to kick out as she passed the grooves, letting her payload pendulum beneath her. She could never have kept it up without the suit's amplification assist, but even with it, the concentration was taxing. She was all too aware of the damage she could do to herself through a single lapse of attention, never mind her cocooned, helpless passenger. An hour of that, then another. The one blessing was that in the time since their departure from Mpozi, 10 hours had passed. The wheel had continued to turn, thereby raising the grapple higher and allowing Mpozi to come back in at about 8 kilometers beneath their initial starting position. Goma did not have to ascend the same distance they had descended, and Vazin was going to risk holding station until she arrived with Nissa. The grapple held, and so did the tether. She was beginning to stumble, though, mistiming her kicks, when a bright light turned her shadow hard-edged. She looked up, squinting against the exhaust of the lander as it settled back onto the wheel. 5 kilometers above her, Vazin cutting it fine this time. But Goma sensed she was nearly home, and that gave her a renewed burst of energy and focus. Suited figures were waiting for her when she reached the underside of the lander. Andiza and Grave helped her up the last few meters. Then they disconnected the line and moved the survival bag into the lock. Goma waited on the tilted ledge. She felt cored out, drained of something vital. But she would not allow herself to linger before resuming the journey back down to Rue. They argued with her about it, but her mind was set. She was the last into the body of the ship, and they had her out of the spacesuit almost before she could blink. Andiza gave her a cursory but efficient examination, satisfying herself that Goma was exhausted, but had otherwise suffered no ill effects. Goma gulped down fluids, putting back some of the liters she had sweated out on the wheel. "Give me 10 minutes to get my head together, then I'm going back down." "No," Andiza said. "We can't stay here, and Vazin won't let you take that risk. They'll just have to wait until the wheel brings them around."
"She told you to tell me that?"
"You're a wreck, Goma Akinya. You've been up and down the wheel without a break, and we almost lost all of you when the grapple gave way. Gandhari won't risk that happening again."
Goma reached for the anger and frustration she knew she ought to be feeling, but found only exhaustion, and the sense that this was an argument she could never win.
"Did you tell her about Rue?"
"Yes, and I've been talking to Rue since you left her. She's lucid, and her life signs look stable. If there'd been bleeding or a skull fracture, I would know by now."
"I hope you're right about that."
"It's my job to be right. Believe me, if there was a way to spirit all of them back up here right now, I'd jump on it. But the point of that dangerous rescue operation was to deliver the supplies Kanu and the others needed. And you succeeded. More than that, you got Nissa back up here."
Goma tried to see beyond her own concerns, if only for a moment.
"How is she?"
"You did your best, and I'll do mine. Now think about yourself for a few minutes. You did a magnificent thing, Goma. You saved a human life."